Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three begins right now. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is hit me up on that text line. Still to come, State Senator Chris Elliott, please stick around for that. We'll reset the news here. It's a lot of Iran, just Middle East in general. Red Sea, the Houthis are targeting oil tankers. Strait of Hormuz continues to be a problem. Oil prices have kind of responded by going up. Brent, North Sea crude, up more than $100 a barrel, kind of hanging out there right now. What's Texas Intermediate at 92? It's some change, but both are up 6-7%. And like I said, that's going to inspire, I think, immediately higher gas prices. But we could get into that. I see a bunch of text about that. Also, we're talking about August 11th primary. Not really much in the way of contest. You have clear favorites in those races. However, what is beginning to be a little bit of a narrative about a potential spoiler here is the vice chairwoman of the Alabama Democratic Party is encouraging Democrats to vote in the Republican primary. Now, the top leadership, Randy Kelly and Joe Reed, have pushed back against it and said it's against their rules. I guess their bylaws. Anyhow, could that be something? Because we don't have closed primaries, and anybody can vote in a Republican primary. That's where these elections will be settled, because in theory, November 3rd will be a Republican night in Alabama. May not be a Republican night nationally. But that's something that's on the radar, if you will. Also, we're talking about tolls. You know, that kind of came up in the middle of the show. And it continues to be an issue in this bridge saga. Alabama dabbling in the toll arena. We are unable to secure the necessary financing for the big, beautiful bridge. And what doesn't help is being in a state that kind of views the coast, I think, as like a luxury item. That there are real people who live on the Gulf Coast in Alabama who have everyday jobs, who are as much an Alabamian as someone who lives in Shelby County or Coleman County or Tallapoosa County or wherever. But policymakers tend to view that as, well, yes, but the traffic that comes through there is not really from Alabama. Let's try to get that traffic to pay for it. While the state's willing to reap the benefit of having a coastline, oil and gas leases, tourist economy, Port of Mobile, it doesn't seem to want to maintain the infrastructure. It doesn't see that as a priority. You would never toll the 2059 overpass over downtown Birmingham like you would this, would you? Or the West Alabama corridor. Or any other road project the state has deemed important. So why this one? If you like having this, well, I guess it's perceived to be a luxury item, that you got to maintain it. You have a responsibility to it. And that includes building infrastructure. And the infrastructure here, yes, will be more expensive, but that's the return on investment there is, yes, you have access to the open seas. You're not a landlocked state. So you get to do more with your economy because of it. Tennessee doesn't have that. They don't get the same benefits. So, I to me, the argument, well, it's just for those people down there who want their free bridge to the beach, is the way it's being framed, is totally, totally inaccurate, unfair, disingenuous, dishonest. Mike. Oh, here we go. Mike with a lot of text here. People can wrap themselves in their American and Israeli flags all day long, but they are the 30% of the 70-30 issue. That absolutely means that even half of Republican voters don't support this issue and the financial problems it's causing will sink Trump's presidency just like COVID did when he trusted deceitful advisors. People, and then he writes, okay. So, Mike, for whatever reason, your text didn't come through earlier. King of all unnamed texters. Even with the toll, it doesn't sound like the build is going to be exactly what is needed for the Bayway. This could be like one of these projects where it's already obsolete by the time it's built. It is already over capacity or at capacity because we waited around so long. The saga of the Mobile Bay and crossing the Mobile Bay, I mean, it's been going on for more than a century. You had a system of ferries in the early days of the automobile in the state. And then you had the causeway. Then you had the Cochrane Bridge. Then you had the Bankhead Tunnel. Then you had the Wallace Tunnels. Then you had the New Africa Town Cochrane Bridge. And then you have the new bridge they're building now. You see a pattern here that, like, every time we think we got a solution that's going to solve this, 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, we got to come up with a new solution. Does this solution get it done for a century? It'll be long and gone by then. But if you're going to sink this kind of investment at the time into something like that, how far down the field are we looking? Hi, Jeff. You're going to see the Minnesota Twins in my hometown of Minneapolis. You need to go to Matt's Bar and get a Juicy Lucy hamburger. It isn't too far from the stadium. Yeah, if you haven't heard, I'll be gone for the next 2 weeks, beginning tomorrow. You get April Marie Fogle. Then you're going to get Friday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, April Marie Fogle. Next Thursday and Friday, Bradley J. He's done some satellite radio and expressed some interest in ever filling in. And he's from Monroe County, so he knows the lay of the land here. Yeah, Will Hampson, who's filled in before on that following Monday, making her fill-in debut, Erica Thomas, for the Jeff Poor Show on that Tuesday. Our good friend Scott Butcher from the Trustful Tribune, he did a show for me a couple of weeks ago. And another guest host, a lot of you know her on our side of the bay, Rebecca Watson. She's filled in for me as well when our youngest was born earlier this year. But, yeah, we're doing I know I talked to probably more than I should about it, but we're doing a baseball tour. And this is very ambitious, and the weather's got to cooperate. I'm assuming that it won't, so some of these will get missed. But we're going to try to do the Cardinals game tomorrow night in St. Louis, Busch Stadium. We've been there before. It's a good halfway point on the way to Minneapolis. Then we're going to do the Twins on Saturday night on Sunday, a day game, so we're going to have to like kind of get to the hotel and then get up early. We're going to Milwaukee, Wisconsin for a Brewers game on that Sunday. And then the next, following Monday, we'll be in Chicago. We're going to get a White Sox game. I'd been there before. And then I'm going to go to Detroit for a Tigers game, Comerica Park. They got a jet down to Pittsburgh, see the Pirates play. And then we got kind of a long drive, but we got a little time. I think it's a day game when the Pirates are playing, so we'll get to go up to Cooperstown. I think induction weekend is this weekend, so that's what kind of muddled things. Do a day off of baseball park and go to Cooperstown. And then the next day, a night game in Toronto. We'll stop to see Niagara Falls on the way. Cleveland after Toronto. Then the Cubs. We may spend 2 days at Wrigley. I haven't decided yet, but we will be there for Cubs versus Yankees at Wrigley. It'll be cool. And then the Dodgers come into town on Monday, and I haven't decided if we're going to do that or not. Louisville Bat Factory on that following Tuesday, and then on the way home, we'll tinker with the idea of hitting a Braves game. It's like bobblehead night or something. And the tickets are insanely cheap. And then be back here on Thursday, and then Friday, I'll be back in my full-time radio hosting capacity 2 weeks from tomorrow. So it's very ambitious, and the weather's got to line up just right, and, you know, we can't have a rain out or something. And if it does, we'll just have to skip it and come back to it at some other point, which has happened. Let's continue on here. Josh, I bet no butterflies, but my money on the ring bearer is being a raccoon. That is not a bad bet. Maz, I agree that gas prices are going to cost the Republicans dearly in the general election. Maybe if they come down by Labor Day, it won't be as bad. But I believe it will be much more costly to the country with all the crap that the Democrats are going to push through. I agree. Like, we got to, like, acknowledge the short term is important, but the long term is very important. And, I can't just sit here and blow sunshine up your, you know what, everything's going to be fine, because I don't think that it is. Unnamed texture writes, the nuclear umbrella used to be, I was a little slow pulling up here. The nuclear umbrella used to be the typical framework whereby countries were able to use nukes. If a country like France or Britain, or in recent days Saudi Arabia, wanted a nuke, they had to go through the United States. Likewise, if some Eastern country wanted a nuke, they had to go through Russia. That was the only way to get a country got a nuke. Russia has offered to run the Iranian nuclear program. Problem solved. Unfortunately, this isn't about nuclear proliferation. It's about U.S. and Lutnick, hegemony in the region. And if Iran becomes a failed state, nuclear proliferation will expand and the Strait of Hormuz will become more ungovernable than it is now. Paul, biggest miscalculation of Trump's career, getting involved with Iran. Some political miscalculation, but was it a strategic miscalculation? And those are two different things. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Was the finest pickup to ever play the blues. I saw the light, I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the program. People need to stop calling it the New Mobile Bay Bridge. It does cross the bay. It's only a $3 billion bridge over the Wallace Tunnel. It's basically a new exit funneling more traffic onto the Bayway. I guess my question is there. You're taking traffic away from something. and you're adding it back to, so you're not really adding traffic. So I don't know. I think that the ultimate plan is to widen the Bayway too. Michael, that April segment was a prime example of why I turn 106 off anytime she's sitting in for y'all. That's a little harsh. On a texture, I am glad you said the word important correctly. My number one pet peeve right now is young people saying I'm important. What's that all about? And don't ask me to be your cultural barometer for that age demo. Hey, Jeff, this is Billy D. Hey, man, what about a major hurricane that would come through like Katrina that would wipe out the Biloxi Bridge? Would that kind of spur everybody along in this? Maybe, but you want to cheer for an act of God, and the we will be paying for it either way. If you have a hurricane that comes through there to wipe out a bridge, you will be paying for it in personal property destruction. I'm not going to read that. Sorry, Derek. Can we change his name to Mike El Said? Their stances are the same. That from Jason. Finally, Toothless Bamber writes, Wednesday may be Tarek Day to pitch. Looking forward to it. I hope so. I hope to see to get Scooball when we're up there. Yeah, a little Braves baseball here. Trade deadline coming up, and they're looking to add an arm to the rotation, which has been sort of a revolving door of pitchers, injuries, and trying out new talent from AAA. So they got to get an arm at the trade deadline, and everybody wants to get Tarek Skubal from the Detroit Tigers. And if they could do that, and I mean, you're adding an ace, but he's a rental. Anyway, enough sports ball talk. 251-343-0106. Need to be in touch with the program. As I said, programming note tomorrow, April Marie Fogle filling in on the program. And apparently, you're very lucky, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to get to hear her and Andrew Sorrell talk about what will happen later that night, the nuptials of John Wall and Brittany Montgomery. John Wall, our Republican lieutenant gubernatorial nominee, is marrying his fiance, longtime girlfriend, Brittany Montgomery, who it's one of these weddings. She, I believe, is from Tennessee. I got to know her because she worked at Bill Hagerty's U.S. Senate office. And they are getting married. So there you have it. We will have a single bachelor lieutenant governor in the state when he is ultimately sworn in as lieutenant governor, assuming he beats Philip Insler, who I believe is the Democrat nominee, a state lawmaker from Montgomery. 251-343-0106, but that's coming up tomorrow, so please make sure you tune in for that. Once again, we'll just kind of recap the news here. More Iran and gas prices. And I know a lot of you don't see eye to eye with me on that, but my debate here is not necessarily against what the Trump administration is doing. It's the consequences of what is going on. Cause if you could strike Iran and you can wage war against Iran without it impacting the American economy, then this is a moot discussion. If you just look at it, it's solely from that, I'm probably for it. But what my concern is if you go down this path and then it causes gas prices to increase, it's going to change and alter voter behavior, and it's not going to be good for Republicans. And then the discussion about Iran just becomes a little more complicated with a Democrat-controlled chamber of Congress, be it the House or the Senate. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
When the dealing's done, every gambler knows that the secret...
It's midnight in Montgomery.
back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Joining us now on the line, he is our returning champion. You get him a day early today. I'll be out tomorrow, but State Senator Chris Elliott is with us. Senator, how are you?
Man, I am great. I'm glad our little storm has passed here and the sun's back out and looks like it's going to be a nice weekend.
Yeah, the storm, you know, it's just kind of you do a little stress test, I guess, and see if we're aware and ready for inclement weather.
Indeed. It was a little bit, you know, more impacts right immediately along the coast. But other than that, I bet nobody else really even knew it other than the rain.
Well, tell me, let's start here. And this has kind of been a topic of discussion. And the missed opportunity will close primaries and what the vice chairwoman of the Democratic Party is saying, which contradicts what the chairman and his party boss are saying. But still, it's out there that, hey, Democrats need to vote in that August 11th primary. And normally you just kind of scout that off like, okay, whatever. But, I mean, this is a low turnout election. This is something that could matter potentially.
Yeah, she said the quiet part out loud, right? You know, I like to see the conflict and the confusion amongst Democrat leadership, for sure. That's a good thing for Republicans, and they can infight all they want to, and you know, let them go at it. But what the vice chairman is saying there is that Democrats need to try to impact and influence a Republican primary election, and so that certainly is something that that could be, you know, well, it's not a primary, right? Excuse me. It's a you know, it is the election. You know, it's not, there's no runoff. It's just the primary there, winner take all. And so it'll be interesting to see if they do that and if they show up and if they listen to her or if anyone is really paying attention. I think we'll have less than 10% voter turnout altogether.
But that's what makes it a little more intriguing, because in a low turnout event, Republicans don't show up, then is it unlikely but possible there's a lane there that Democrats could sway enough votes to pick a less desirable candidate?
It is possible. I think that, you know, practically the front runners, if you look at polling, are really so far ahead that it would be unlikely. But it's possible that they could certainly impact the elections. And look, this is not anything new, right? Democrats have in Alabama have been playing in Republican primary elections, you know, for a long time. That's not a secret, and that's not a new thing. And until and unless, you know, we decide that closing primaries is the right way to go, and I'm not confident that it is, but I think it needs more discussion, then we'll continue to see folks decide, hey, there's no reason for me to vote in a Democrat primary. They're not going to win a general election. Let me go play in this Republican primary instead.
Well, does Eisner's comments, does that sway anybody? I would think that it does debunk an argument that this isn't really happening. This isn't a thing. You guys are just you know, a solution looking for a problem.
I think that Tabitha is going to find out that her her megaphone isn't quite what she thinks it is, and that it practically does not have nearly as much impact as she would like for it to have.
Well, and still though, the principle of it, and I, you know, your friend Tom Watley, I think, was a victim of this. These things happen. It's not unheard of, and especially where voter participation doesn't really measure up to what we would expect.
No, you're exactly right. And look, I represent probably one of the most conservative districts in Alabama, but that doesn't mean that there aren't Democrats in it, right? And so at the end of the day, when you have close elections, fortunately, you know, mine wasn't close this primary, but when you have close elections, a couple hundred votes can make a difference. And this, and as long as we have open primaries, it can be impactful. And I think it has been in the past, and I think it will be again. It's something that a candidate has to take into account. From a public policy standpoint, we have to decide whether or not that's a good thing or not. And from a, you know, Republican Party standpoint, I sit on the state executive committee still, we got to decide whether or not that's this party function is something that you know, that we want to close down and that we are willing to take ownership of, because the counter to the argument is, of course, that these are public funds that we're using right now to run the primary.
Where were you on that last proposal, last session, you know, that came out of the House?
I think that we need to have more discussion on it. And Jeff, you know me, I'm usually one of those that will tell you point blank where I am on something one way or the other. But I think we need to seriously sit down and talk about it. It did not come up for a vote. I think we were rushed in dealing with a bunch of other things. I think that there are pros and cons, but I have not landed on it one way or the other. As soon as I do, I'll be sure to tell you, but I haven't gotten there yet.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Something he brought up to me, and I guess I was aware of it and been brought up to me, but not really as engaged. Baldwin County's search for a new school superintendent to fill the vacancy left by Eddie Tyler. Only two candidates applied. As you were telling me off air, I think there were some other applicants, but they withdrew their application. What's going on there?
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I didn't, you know, it's not up to me as a state senator to have a dog in the fight, obviously, as far as who the next superintendent is. And I don't really know either one of the candidates all that well. The selection has been in the school system for a while. I've certainly met Marty McCray, and but I've never really sat down and talked to him about any policy issues. But he's going to be the new superintendent. The concern for me, and I think the story, is that there were only really two applicants and that went through the process. And I think that is, and should be, you know, from a 10,000 foot view, a little bit concerning. If, you know, why for the third largest school system in the state, why are there only two applicants? And what does that say about the health of our county school system as a whole? And I'm not saying that it does say anything. I just think that that is a precautionary data point for me. And while, again, I don't have anything to do necessarily with the county school system, the health of that school system is very important to the overall health of our county. And seeing only two applicants is of concern, I think, when you look at things from a wider view.
Well, and so, I mean, was it a matter of just like, you know, you see red flags when you apply for a job like this, and did the school board just not do enough to get more applicants in the pool? I mean, what do you think are those possibilities?
Well, I know, and it shouldn't be a secret that I had spoken to several school board members a year or two ago, probably 2 years ago. And there's been drama surrounding the school system, right? It's been in the press and all over Facebook and everything else. And one of the things that I cautioned them on is really kind of, you know, staying the course too long, and that it may impact the applicant pool later down the road, right? So if you allow all of this drama to exist in the public sphere, you may have a harder time recruiting candidates or getting applicants to be interested in the job. And so that was a concern of mine years ago. And unfortunately, it seems to have come to fruition in that we only had a very limited number of candidates that were interested in the job. Now, I don't know why that is. I certainly don't think it's because nobody knew that they could apply. And I certainly don't think it's a compensation issue. I don't know what the compensation package is going to look like for the new superintendent, but I imagine it is generous from a public, you know, from a public employee standpoint. And so if it's not knowing about it, and it's not a salary issue, then why only two candidates? And I think that's something that we as a community, as a county, really need to take a step back at and look at and figure out why that is.
Senator Chris Blackshear was a guest on this show earlier this week, and two things he said, two different topics. But the first one I want to hit on is the Alabama High School Athletic Association. Now, the lawsuit with the legislature and the governor was settled but there's still some fires to be put out, and you're hearing that the private schools are meeting or about to meet or have met, or I'm not sure where that is. I'm talking about going out on their own, that there's still some problems here lingering, and ask some outstanding questions about the governing of high school sports in the state. Is any discussions from the legislature about that?
I haven't heard any recently. I will tell you, I think Representative Blackshear is obviously an authority on that topic. He's been very involved in it. My involvement's been, you know, tangential, but certainly still there. I continue to hear frustration that the Alabama High School Athletic Association's priorities are not about kids playing sports, but rather they are about they are about protecting coaches and records. And that to me is concerning as a parent. I want our Alabama High School Athletic Association to be focused on kids and kids playing and being allowed to play so that they can be successful, and not about protecting the adults, their records, or playing a game of gotcha. And I think all too often that's what we get out of the Alabama High School Athletic Association.
The private schools going out, that creates a lot of turmoil, because then you create an entity where they can recruit. They set their own rules. They don't necessarily need the AHSAA, do they?
No, and that's another thing that I think it's indicative of a larger problem. And so if we're going to have leadership that acts in the manner that the High School Athletic Association acts, folks that can and have the ability to go do something else will. And that's the same argument that I make with city schools versus county schools, right? You can make whatever policies you want to, but if you have folks that have the ability to say the way you're doing it doesn't work for us, we're going to leave, then and you don't take that into account in your decision-making process, then don't whine when they leave. And so I think you see the same things going on with private schools now. If they're in a position where they don't have to participate in the High School Athletic Association's governance, and they decide to go do something else on their own because it benefits their children and benefits them, then they'll go do it. And the fact that the High School Athletic Association isn't taking that into account is a leadership failure.
Last one here. We'll kind of wind it down. Gambling came up in our discussion, and Representative Blackshear said something interesting, you wonder about the balance of power in the gambling discussion with Senator Albritton losing in his primary and who's going to be the tip of the spear there. The rumor mill has that Tommy Tuberville is going to try to do something early. But according to Representative Blackshear, he's not aware of any discussions that something like that is coming on the way. He said on Capital Journal, in fact, that he wouldn't expect it even next year, but sometime maybe during the next quadrennium. Is there any reason to believe that this won't be something that comes up next session?
I don't anticipate it coming up next session. I think that the governor is going to have to be engaged on this topic. Coach is not the governor yet. He will be, shortly, within, 6 months or so. And then I expect for him to be engaged in this topic. But I don't think it's wise for us to run into this with a brand new governor who has not let his feelings be known on this yet. And so we'll have the opportunity to do that this first year of this session, in these first months, and go from there. But this is something that is complicated enough from a vote count standpoint that you want to have time for the new governor, the new administration to get into place. There are going to be new House members and new senators for them to get their hands around what is a very complex issue, instead of rushing into this to a point where you end up with yet another loss, another failure, another inability to do anything, which I think is a mistake. And so again, let's let Coach get in, let's let Coach engage on the topic before the legislature goes off half-cocked in the first year of the quadrennium.
What is the I think your colleague Sam Gavan is very opposed to it, doing the special session within the session on gambling. Like, is that, because that seems the most efficient way to do it, or anything for that matter. But that there's, I guess, it makes it a little more difficult to wheel a deal or talk about it or whatever. Is Is that something that your colleagues and you kind of frown upon doing it that way?
There are merits to that, and it might be this might be one of those topics that needs to be handled in a special session. And I say that mainly because if you don't, it ties up everything else. And I will tell you that one of my aversions to the gambling conversation is just that. It is so pervasive that it impacts every other piece of legislation. It dominates an entire session anyway. And so you may be ahead to segregate it as its own topic, as opposed to having it almost waste the entirety of a regular session when there are important pieces of legislation that need to be considered. And so my advice would be to do a special session on gaming if that's something that Coach wants to do, because you're going to end up with a one topic session either way if you decide to take up gaming, because it will dominate the entirety of the regular session.
Senator, we'll leave it there. You're always very generous with your time, and we'll do it again in a few weeks.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, State Senator Chris Elliott there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
A couple guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles. Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight. Oh, mama, can this really be the end? To be stuck inside of Mobile with the Memphis Blues again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on what's led to this Thursday morning. Real quick, Tim. Jeff, what makes you so interested in watching baseball when I never heard you ever talk about playing baseball before? Just kind of grew up with it. It was on all the time at the house. I didn't play much. No, I tried, but I wasn't very good. But that's spectator sports in general, same with baseball and football and basketball. And then didn't play football either, but went to a lot of Auburn games in my life. Southern Jedi, gas prices up means party and power loses. I tend to agree with that. And one more here from Mike at the HSAA. We're going to engage in class warfare they've been doing. Private schools, 100% should start their own. And then I think something that looks like a Ricky text. Anyway, enough of that. Coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile. Sean, what you got?
Hey, Jeff. We'll talk about the show. I do want to talk about what you just mentioned, too, that I grew up in a household where the Braves were on all the time. I mean, if they were on TV, I mean, the dad had the Braves on. I just didn't like... It didn't work on me. I mean, I was interested, and I've tried, to, like, get engaged in...
Well, you were a guy, you were looking for a body of water to put a fishing line in, right?
That's true. I was usually getting in trouble for fishing somewhere I wasn't supposed to be growing up while Dad was watching the Braves. But, I mean, I got to go to some cool stuff. He was a fan, so we'd go to spring training, do that. I remember going, who spring trained at Vero Beach? Was it Dodgers? I think we'd go down there.
Yeah, for a long time.
So it's cool stuff. And I have very cool, like, autographs and stuff from back then. I got, like, a Sadahara O autograph and all that. Like, all these kind of cool autographs from baseball greats.
Well, the other thing about it, like, my kid likes to play it. Like, he's really into it, and it's, like, his thing. So,
What a cool thing.
It's not necessarily just me. I mean, I do like to watch baseball, and I went to a lot of games while I lived in D.C., at the Nationals Park, but it's just kind of a sweetener there when your 5-year-old's really into it.
I think that's the last time I've been to a pro baseball venue, even though it was a congressional game. You and I were at, we were there at in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we went to, that's where the congressional game, I think that's the last time I've been in a pro stadium. I walked by Fenway when I was in Boston, but that was it.
You get tickets for like $10. It's just like, what else do you want to do?
Well, I like the whole thing. I think you and I talked about it back then, just not on air. I like the whole, like, I want to go, I want to get a hot dog and a beer, be at the park. Like, I like all that part. And I love that the baseball is going on. I just don't know it like I do football, And,
another part of me is like, you got your escapes, you got the farm, and I mean, I got to turn the politics off. I can't watch Fox News. I cannot 100%. Watch Fox News primetime lineup live. No, I cannot sit there and watch Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, and Jesse Waters every night.
No,
and this is
if you
the
did,
escape.
Though, if you did, if you came with me, you know, to Mom's house, you could get all that. You can hear it from outside the house. You can get the primetime.
Because I already know what they're going to say most of the time. The news is a little dated, and they're just reacting to it. And you generally know these guys' reactions at that point.
Yep, I'm just excited. Yeah, but I'm excited about y'all's trip. What a cool trip to go on and check it out. What, you know, I love the Americana of it. And please take lots of photos and send them back to us. We want to.
Yeah, they'll be on the Facebook page. So that'll where you can find them. But we get the old Rand McNally Road Atlas, and I get a highlighter.
Do you still have? Do you still have yours? Do you still have your?
I get a new one every year.
You know, I need to get one because my son and I are getting ready to go on a trip. And, you know, even though I'll just map it, I will draw it out as well. I remember the old Rand McNally. If you were a child of the 80s, remember this. My mother had the drawer she stored the potpourri in. Do y'all remember potpourri? Is where the atlas was. So every time you opened it up, it smelled like potpourri.
Get that floral effervescence, huh?
That's for sure. Hey, coming up in a couple minutes, Midday Mobile, hour number one, Mobile County District Attorney Keith Blackwood is going to join me for a conversation about Pritchard, what's happened there, and what's going to happen going forward. We'll do that also in hour number two. Kyle Hamburg from LandNap joins me. Lots more coming up on Midday Mobile.
All right, y'all stay tuned for that. I got to get out of here. I will try to do better on what I think August the 7th. In the meantime, enjoy our revolving door of guest host. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5. This is where-